You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 9:59, and coming up at 10:15, it's Flashpoints, featuring excerpts from the documentary film Citizen 4, and at 11 on stage and studio, host Dee Mae Roberts features the Vanport Mosaic Festival. And at 11:30 on Art Focus, host Andre Middleton will interview fine paper-cutting artist Christina Hart. All that's coming up on KBOO following Air Cascadia, coming up at 10 after this.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the May 21st performance of Lalgudi Krishnan and Shahid Parvez at the First Baptist Church in Portland at 7 p.m. Lalgudi Krishnan began his musical training at age 5, and over the years he has carved a niche for himself as a top-ranking violinist. Shahid Parvez descends from 6 generations of sitarists and is the recipient of numerous prestigious awards, including the Government of India's Padma Shri. Again, that's Lalgudi Krishnan and Shahid Parvez, Saturday, May 21st at 7 p.m. at the First Baptist Church, located at 909 Southwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cascadia. Today is Tuesday, May 17th, 2016, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, real community radio for real people. 90.7 FM, KBOO.FM on the web. First up, your weather. And here's another reason I do the weather. I saw on International Middle East Media Center recently a report that has become all too familiar and redundant even. A boy in a small Palestinian village was seized by Israeli military and dragged away, probably for throwing rocks. And I thought about that. I was walking outside at night and looked up at the night sky, live out in the country. The sky was so beautiful. And I love feeling the cool air and raindrops on my face. And I thought about that Palestinian boy who will not be seeing the sky that we all share. We all look up at the sky all around the world. When the sun sets, we have it there displayed before us. And we feel the weather. The boy won't be feeling sun or rain on his face, and he won't be seeing the stars at night. He'll be in an Israeli prison. Okay, weather today in Portland, partly sunny, highs around 75, eventually north wind 6 to 8 miles per hour. And for tonight, partly cloudy, lows around 51, 8 to 13 mile per hour winds. And we could get a little bit of gusty weather later on in the night, 18 miles per hour. And so for Wednesday, there's a 20% chance of showers around midday. Otherwise, sunny skies and a high near 70 for tomorrow night. Again, a slightly greater chance of showers. It just seems to be hovering up there. And we'd have lows around 51. And again, same thing with the wind. So starting out at 6 to 13 miles per hour with a possibility of gusts up to 18. And that said, as everyone knows, there was enormous worldwide actions on the weekend. Many people, I believe something like 52 in Anacortes, were arrested. Lots of other people put their freedom on the line in the name of keeping the world free from any further damage from the use of fossil fuels. One of the slight lines was, I remember when all of this was trees. That is a very familiar phrase. People returning to rural areas and see them covered with the cancer of a suburban sprawl frequently find themselves uttering that line. I remember when all of this was trees. And one reason it isn't anymore is because those people saying that, some people are there. Well, you change it by your actions. When you move to a beautiful place, because it's beautiful, you can't count on it being beautiful much longer. That's the Heisenberg's principle of real estate. Joining us today is Emily Thompson, who was there up in Anacortes, and many people. We spoke yesterday with Afrin, who said that she missed those 3 days of action because it was remembering in Occupy. So good morning. We're very happy to have you with us today, Emily.
Good morning. Thank you, Chris.
This was an important event. And I think that the momentum, one senses the momentum from this event on the weekend is going to be perpetuated across the future, across the world. This was a very significant action. You were there. Can you talk a little bit about what was accomplished and what we need to do to...
Sure, absolutely. So the Break Free mobilization was one of many actions happening in 21 countries around the world. There were 6 actions here in the U.S. alone. And the whole point is that, you know, world leaders agreed back in December that we have to keep below 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming in order to avoid catastrophe. But there are no plans currently on the table, no treaties, no laws, no regulatory authorities, et cetera, that it will remotely accomplish that. And so the political system is failing. What we need is people power to exert pressure on the political system. And this weekend in Anacortes, we really did that. Last year with Shell No, I think there were never more than about 1,000 people at any given point. This weekend, and that was in Seattle, and of course also in Portland. And this year in Anacortes, despite the fact that it's much further away and the logistics were vastly harder, we had a couple thousand people and we also, several hundred of those people risked arrest. There was a People's Climate Conference that was happening all weekend in Anacortes that was focused on deepening the conversation around having a just transition that doesn't leave workers and communities behind. And then we also had the Indigenous Day of Action, very powerful, very beautiful event on Saturday. And then, of course, there was a rail blockade. To my knowledge, nobody has ever tried to quite put together a package like that before, certainly not on all volunteer power, which is what we had. And we only had a few months to do this. It was really kind of a crazy thing to attempt. But it was quite successful and really very beautiful. And one of the most important things is just, so in talking about the effectiveness of any event like this, it's always hard because, of course, change takes a long time. And last year with Shell No, and then got arrested by the Coast Guard, after having delayed the Polar Pioneer for maybe 45 minutes, the group of us. And we had put so much work into that. It felt, a little bit like a failure, and it was a hard thing to swallow, basically. But the truth is that, 6 months later, less than 6 months later, Shell announced that it had given up its Arctic drilling program. And they, a couple of insiders at Shell were explicit to us about the fact that that decision was based in part on the reputational damage that they feared, which was us. That we had brought the issue of Arctic drilling and raised its profile just incredibly. And so it doesn't, matter if the trains, it does matter if the oil trains are running and if the rigs are moving. But in the longer term, what you need to do is to raise the profile of the issue tremendously, make people see that people power really matters and that we can all do something about climate change, because so many people feel, helpless in the face of climate change. It's a big and amorphous problem. Everybody, who's paying attention knows that it's already a big deal and we can't actually stop it. We can just keep it from getting worse than it has to be. And so, Yeah. Again, this weekend, that was the main thing, I think, is that in many, many, many ways, we deepened relationships, we broadened the movement, and we showed people that they can accomplish something.
And there is no fossil fuel plan, actually. There is nothing in the way of federal regulatory presence. The EPA is virtually not there. We have Nick Cady on the line talking about a disastrous forest plan. I thought I'd bring Nick on to join the conversation and talk about this plan. Talk about Earth Justice has been extremely effective in suing the pets off these people. They just keep coming back. I think this is plan number 5. They keep coming back with worse and worse plans, forgetting that this is a planet that we all share. We cannot afford to cut any more trees. We cannot afford to take any more fossil fuel out of the ground. The urgency of this question cannot be stressed enough. Let's bring Nick on with Cascadia Wildlands. Nick, thank you for being with us today. So we saw the action on the weekend, and we see the introduction of this forest plan. It will take a lot of work with the Earth Justice in courts. What else would you like to see activists, listeners in general, volunteers, people who are concerned, what would you like to see from all the rest of us?
Yeah, we've been trying to get the public very engaged on this process all along. It's the Bureau of Land Management, kind of to give a little background here, is changing the forest plans, or basically removing tons of protections on 2.6 million acres of federally managed public lands kind of across Western Oregon.
And there's so little coverage. I mean, I've heard virtually nothing. Maybe I'm just missing something. Maybe I don't listen to enough mainstream media. But I've heard virtually nothing about this. This is again one of these under the radar moves. It's the type of thing we normally expect on a Friday afternoon when people aren't paying attention. Talk a little bit more about some of the more egregious points in the plan.
Well, yeah, as you said, this is kind of a continual effort on behalf of the Bureau of Land Management, Land Managing Agency out west here. And they've been basically trying to eliminate or reduce protections that they've had in Clinton's Northwest Forest Plan for decades now. And this is the latest iteration of that effort. But this is kind of the most drastic we've ever seen it. The plan dramatically increases clear-cut logging, which had largely been phased out on public lands in Oregon, and reduces protections for waterways and rivers, focuses on high-intensity motorized recreation as opposed to non-motor recreation, completely ignores climate change and the effects of climate storage, and it's just in every way possible, their proposed plan is worse for our communities and the environment.
It's a huge, huge tract of land also that includes some of the last best salmon habitat in Oregon. I know that Glenn Spain, as the Pacific Coast Federation of Fishermen's Association, has great concern about this. So we constantly worry about declining fish populations and rush out there blasting away at the cormorants or whatever other scapegoat creature has been, finds itself in the crosshairs. And we forget that they're trying to pass this plan that is going to be a death sentence for the salmon populations. I cannot understand why this is not front page news. It should be. Emily, if you're still there and you would like to weigh in on this, dealing with fossil fuel is one thing, and leaving trees in the ground is another related concern of, it should be a concern of everyone, and it would be were people to know more about these things. And collectively, how does this present Oregon and the greater this national stage and indeed global stage as far as being a you know, a green state. Well, given that Anacortes is in Washington, thinking mm-hmm. of Cascadia as a whole bioregion, can you talk a little bit about how this fits into any climate, any plan for, that's come up with, that people come up with for confronting climate change?
Sure. Yeah, it's quite complex. There's retaining our forests is actually a huge piece of this, and there are lots of really important things going on right now as far as that goes. And it's also so. For example, there's a piece about, you know, not burning fossil fuels. There's a the piece about forestry and our timber industry and what we're doing about, you know, maintaining our forests and also planting new forests. And there's also the whole biocarbon initiative and there's ways of farming. So all of these pieces are super, super, super important. And you have to have people moving forward on all of them, because, you know, if we don't do that, we're in real trouble. And nobody thinks, one thing many people don't understand is that even if we stopped using fossil fuels today, 100%, we would still be going over 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming as a result of the sort of lag effect of the carbon we've already put into the atmosphere. So learning how to work with nature to reabsorb a lot of the carbon, not in a high-tech way, but in a way that nature approves of,
yeah. Basically. We're just reducing consumption.
Is super important, yeah.
A couple seconds from you, Nick.
Sure, yeah. To kind of build on what was being said there, these coastal rainforests, I mean, Oregon's temperate rainforests, are the best forests functioning as a carbon sink that we have in the world. And I think it's an incredibly short-sighted approach to clear-cut these forests and
they're in that plan.
Release tons of carbon into the atmosphere. It's just, you know, again, short-sighted profits and not taking into effect the massive climate change problem we have.
It was terribly irresponsible. Thank you both so much. We spoke with Emily Thompson. We spoke also with Nick Cady with Cascadia Wildlands. This has been at Cascadia for Tuesday, May 17th. Tammy Dean engineered for us today. Thanks, Tammy. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOO.